30 seconds left to play. Warrington will get the ball back. Warrington will get a chance here. If they can get the meters in, they will have a chance at a drop goal. 30 seconds left to go here. Salford's unbeaten home record is on the line as Chris Hill takes it in. Can Hill make some meters? 25 seconds on the clock. Hill runs it in. Bit too far for a drop goal at the moment. Will we see a little bit of Sandown magic as George King takes it in? We're into the last 10 seconds. Matty Russell, we are now into the last 10 seconds of this match. Is there a chance of a drop goal? Chris Sandow will have a chance at it. Chris Sandow with a chance at a drop goal. Is this going over? It looks pretty good. Absolutely amazing finish. Unbelievable. The Warrington fans go absolutely mad. Chris Sandow has just kicked a 45-yard drop goal right on the hitter. The Warrington fans, the Warrington players on the field, the Salford fans stream out the stadium. That is absolutely amazing.
Coming up in today's programme, Daniel in the podcast propose which props would probably be worth propagating. Is there a Wire player about to pack up his kit for the south of France? There's a hospital pass thrown in the way of a headbanded guest. Davina McCall goes in search of a long-lost tactic. Has the record try-scoring State of Origin centre got a battle on his hands to become king? Plus, Jim Vaseline's back with another complaint as he lays his lockdown letter down on the line. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and on this date in 1960, Bob Dylan recorded Like a Rolling Stone. Well, as we all know, Rolling Stone gathers no moss, and neither will this podcast if I crack on. Today, however, I'm not just joined by our two usual dipshits, as we have a guest presenter too, but more of that in a second. Okay, keeping with the theme of historical events, did you know on this date, in 1948, the Australian cricketing legend Don Bradman was bowled out for a duck? So it seems only appropriate, first up, introducing a man that, as a boy, I bowled out more times than I can remember. Yes, as he batted in my parents' driveway, he casually ventured too far outside his off stump and would edge one into the garage door. A garage door that never once dropped a catch. It's Sam, Chris Tavare Sankey.
Yes, hello, Rob. Yes, Chris Tavare, perhaps more Mike Atherton, similar style, but a bit more northern. I think around that time, I once played for Grappenall Thirds and Andy Gregory.
Grappenall Thirds.
Grappenall yep. Thirds, yeah, that'd be right.
Well, if you saw me play, that's about right, yes.
Oh, dear. Also, on this date in 1997, Naomi Campbell was hospitalised due to a drugs overdose, which can mean only one thing. Secondly, a man that I've seen roll more spliffs on a Doors album cover whilst drinking an entire bottle of Blue Nun all to himself before he ventured out to legends, and I've heard Steve Price say the word resilient. It's Dennis with Neil and I Waywell.
Hello. It was a fantastic film, though, wasn't it, with Neil and I? I think I might have to go and watch that again. There was a couple of quotes out of that, and I don't know which one is more akin to what, you know, what my background. First one was, we want the finest wines available to humanity, which was something I think I can relate to nowadays with wine. And obviously Sam with about 20 bottles behind him there. Lockdown's going well. And the other one was, I feel like a pig shat in my head.
But also, there's a no historic date to match up with this chat, because this is the date we'll all remember as going down in history. Making his debut on the podcast, yes, he's the Flash of Grease Lightning, wearing a headband you may well have seen run past you on the streets of Warrington. Welcoming to What Would Brian Bevan Say from Warrington Hospital Radio, it's Dave Birch.
Thanks very much. I knew that ever continued to bombard you on the lockdown letters. Then you just invite me on because you're sick of reading me emails.
That's right.
Now, we should say Dave's wearing a lovely headband this morning. You've got a red one, mate. What's written on the front of that?
Headband power. Yeah,
do you find it makes a difference when you're out running and you put the headband on? Does it just put that extra step in your stride?
No, but it stops the sweat from going in my eyes. I'm a big fat mess.
Certainly doesn't stop your hair going in your eyes, does it?
No, well, I lost my fringe in about 1996.
Yeah, that's a shame.
And how are you going, Dave, with all this lockdown, mate? How's it going at your end?
Yeah, not too bad at the moment. Keeping myself busy, having to do a lot of the radio stuff from home at the moment. So we're using all means just to get some good broadcasting onto the radio. Myself and, of course, the other members of the radio station. Currently furloughed, so doing all the homeschool. So practically I'm arguing with kids pretty much 5 days a week. It's
pretty much the same as everyone, isn't it, really? And you're doing a bit of DJing as well, are you still? You still got the decks out at home on a Friday night?
Yeah, Friday and Saturday. We do a rock show on a Friday night. So last night we just did a lot of rocking and a few too many ciders. So thankfully you can't see my eyes because I'm feeling a little bit rough this morning. And then tonight we've got the Saturday night in disco.
Oh.
Which basically goes from 6 o'clock in the evening till last week it was 4 o'clock in the morning. So
right.
you can see how that goes. And literally you just log on to Twitch. .tv / DJ Virtue, and then pretty much you get on and you can put all your requests in the chat room, and if they're any good, I'll play them.
Sam looks confused now, Dave, because you said Twitch. He's just got this blank look on his face, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, I wasn't asking you to move.
Twitch is what I do when Denny starts one of his monologues, thinking, God, where's this going?
And when you had the Fringe, Dave, going back to when you had the Fringe and sort of keeping on that theme of music, what nightclubs would we have found you in Warrington in your heyday?
Mm. Oh, I was a big fan of The World.
I went deaf in The World. Unbelievable.
What sort of music do you like?
I'm pretty much into anything. I am a big sort of dance music fan, though. Sort of the Ibiza scene in the end of the 90s, early 2000s. I do like a good bit of indie music as well. So a massive fan of likes of Oasis and James and Charlton and stuff like that. But I'm pretty easygoing. That's probably why I enjoy doing the radio sort of thing. I do sort of 5-6 shows on there of all sorts of genres. So can pretty much put me on to anything.
When we had Carl Fitzpatrick on the podcast, we read out a letter that a young girl was complaining about the music at the Halliwell Jones, saying it was a little bit dated. What are your thoughts on that, Dave? Think it's about right?
Yeah, I think sometimes with the music at the Halliwell Jones, I mean, the Tom Hark thing, that obviously comes from Dave Swanson many, many moons ago at the start of the Super League era. But if it's not broke, don't fix it. Everyone seems to like it. You can put your hands in the air and wave them about. And I enjoyed the time when they used to give the players their own try music. I remember Joel Monaghan used to play Lady in Red, didn't he? And commentating on that, and Joel Monaghan goes in the corner, and next minute Christopher serenades everybody.
Well, it might be let the dogs out. But
idea to bring that back next time you speak to Carl. As long as the players like a little bit of a power ballad or something when they score a try.
In 25 minutes, Ken Dodd tops the bill at the City Varieties Theatre Leeds for the good old days. First on BBC One, the 9 o'clock news with Angela Rippon.
What would Brian Bevan use? All the news and our views. Is that okay, Dickie? Really must come over for lunch sometime soon.
Right, news of the week, gang. First up, the Daily Mail are reporting that Greg Inglis will have to fight for his place at The Wire. He might not be king. Sam, what did you make of that, mate?
Well, you were a bit disparaging when you sent that story forward. But do you know what? If King said that for real, then good on him. He doesn't want to just bend over and let his place be taken.
Well,
he doesn't, does he? So if he says, "Don't matter who you are, you're going to have to fight for your place," then yeah, good on him. But yeah, he does play the same side this year. King's playing left centre this year, and English plays left centre.
So Dave, come on, help us out. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that we may not be seeing Anthony Gellin next year. So there's a place back in his old position. So why King can't just move across to right centre, and then Greg Inglis goes in at left, unless Warrington have something else up their sleeve to replace the right centre position. And then maybe Toby King will have to fight for his position.
We've said probably he's going to end up in the back row, because if they've got Ashton, who's going to find his way into the side at fullback, then surely Ratchford goes into the centre, doesn't he? And then we've got one too many, so to speak, even if Gelling does go away.
Well, I think you've got it all wrong, you lot, anyway, because really I think that Inglis should be playing in the A-team on Victoria Park and making sure that, you know, he's going to earn his place. I don't think he's
waiting his turn like everyone else, you mean?
Yeah, avoiding the dog shit, running around the field, you know.
So are we pretty certain then that Gelling isn't coming back? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any rumours apart from, you know, people are saying that he's over in New Zealand, he's doing the roofing and all this kind of stuff. But we don't honestly know, do we, whether he's coming back? The club haven't made any decisions on this, Sam.
No, we don't know. We don't know. We're just surmising. There's a lot of noise out there, but none of it coming from the club. So we'll wait and watch this space.
I like Matty Ashton at fullback. I've got to be honest, the first few games of the season, he's really set the place alight. But I think you've always got to have Stephen Ratchford in the team. You know, if everybody's fit and you're putting your first choice 13 out, I think you're right. I think Ratchford goes into the centre alongside Inglis, and King maybe goes as an interchange, where he'd be really, you know, he's going to be great on the interchange bench, because you get an injury in the backs, he can drop in there. You get an injury in the forwards, he can also drop into those positions. So he may not like that because he wants to cement a place. But from a Warrington point of view, I think he's going to be indispensable next year.
Not going to keep his beautiful looks, though, if he moves into the second row. I mean, this is what happened to Dennis. Dennis was an absolute Adonis, weren't you, mate, until you started playing prop? Now look at you. Bag of spanners.
Yeah. So that's
he's looking good, though, today, because, you know, he's got the headband on, so he's made an effort. Yes. So he's got the power.
There you
he?
Go. Made an effort, Dave. That's what I like. I make an effort, you see. Not like these two.
No, it's true. Sean Wayne has been linked with a move possibly to the Dragons. His name's been sort of thrown around this week, which I kind of guess puts it all in a bit of disarray if he's going to continue to be the Great Britain coach. Sean Wayne in the NRL, Dave?
I probably heard the same interview as you have with reference to Sean Wayne being linked. And Mr. Andrew Voss was mentioning that. I think it's more the Australians would like to see someone like Sean Wayne in. I think he's very well respected. And I think the Australians are a little bit scared of maybe England in the World Cup. So if they try and take the English coach, then that may, you know, help them out. But, you know, if Sean Wayne did want to move over to the NRL, I'm sure he could do it part-time, just like Wayne Bennett did. You know, it's up to Sean Wayne, but I just think Sean Wayne's such a proud Englishman. The way he's spoken already since getting the job, I think he'd turn that NRL down anyway, and I think he'd just go for England and try and make his name, you know, as an English coach who could win the World Cup.
To be fair, half of the England team are actually playing in Australia at the minute. So if he did take something like the St George job, if it was offered, then the Australians would be paying for him to do his scouting.
Mm. You've got a team there, though, that haven't won a game so far this year, though, have they?
Well, this is it. You know, it's a poison chalice. If he goes over,
he's hiding to nothing.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it was a really interesting half hour, actually, that with Voss, wasn't it, Dave Woodson?
Oh, here we go. Promoting another podcast. He's off.
Oh, he's off again, isn't he?
But it was, in terms of, it was interesting to hear him say the Dragons are a bunch of fans who turn on themselves very quickly. So
fitting well, then, it'd be like the Pirates.
It would.
Yeah, it would. He would. I don't think he'd go. I think he'll stay. I think he's also got quite a few family ties over there, hasn't he? He's got grandchildren, etc., that he likes to spend a lot of time with. So be a huge upheaval for him to go. But one player that is going is Luke Thompson. The news breaking in the last few days that he's off to the Bulldogs. He didn't take a reduction in his salary, Sam, like everyone else did. So no sort of camaraderie there, no unity, no solidarity amongst the players at Saints. What do you make of it?
Well, he's certainly not going to be welcome back to Saints, is he? If he doesn't make it down under and comes back with his tail between his legs. This has been on the cards for a while, hasn't it? And the first rumours surfaced with both Ben Murdoch and Luke Thompson possibly going early. You know, the Bulldogs, they got off to a win, but they need some extra firepower up front. Be interesting to see whether he makes any impact on there. I've actually been looking at his stats, and they're no better than Chris Hill's. He's not been pulling up any trees, really. Missing tackles, only average gain of 7 metres per carry. Errors and penalties given away. Maybe his heart's not been in it as soon as he knew he was signing for Australia. Maybe he's wanted away for a while.
He's going to take a few weeks to get up to speed. He's going to have to go into quarantine for 14 days when he arrives, if he doesn't pick up COVID on the flight coming over. And then clearly it'll take a few more weeks for him to get into his stride. The one thing that worries me about Thompson, and it goes back to what I've said about Bateman, is that neither Bateman or Thompson are that big. Thompson's not the biggest forward in the world. He's got an engine on him. And he's also exceptionally brave. And we've started to see Bateman's body breaking down now. He's played a year of NRL. He's thrown that body on the line, and all of a sudden we've got a dicky shoulder. I just worry for Luke Thompson as well, that he might just come over with just this huge ego, no doubt in the lad's bravery, but whether he's big enough to play the way he's been playing in the Super League, I'm a little bit unsure of. And if he's not going back to Saints, maybe he's our next big signing in a couple of years. Maybe Luke Thompson will find his way back to the UK, and having sort of flavoured the salary cap over here, it's going to be the likes of Moran that's going to have to pay for him in the English League. Mm. Dennis, would you be happy to see Luke Thompson at Warrington?
The thing is, though, why would you, if he was that good and he's that, you know, one of the top props, why would you wait for him to go to the NRL for his stock value to go up and then spend a shitload more money to bring him back? Why not just offer him something, you know, now, if he's that good?
We can't afford him. You can't afford him.
No, but your strategy is the fact that if you think that we need a prop, which we have done for over 12 months, is you say, right, actually, that's key to taking us forward. So, you know, make your decision now. But I'm always ahead of the game. Look at tackle bags.
What do you make of him, Dave? What do you think of Luke Thompson? Where would you rate him in the British game?
I think he had a fantastic year last year. He was definitely number one prop for me last year in Super League, in a winning Saints side. But as you mentioned, Saints haven't been as good in the early rounds this year. Of course, they were awful at the Halliwell Jones. As I tipped at half-time, obviously, that they would come back and win. knowing that Luke Thompson was playing, but yeah, which was a bad tip. But, you know, you don't know what happens behind the scenes at Saints. Obviously, they've got a new coach. Maybe he was really happy playing for Justin Holbrook. And as soon as Holbrook said he was going, maybe he's not as impressed with Christian Wolfe and decided that he might as well go over to Australia and start his career there a little bit sooner. Maybe things aren't as rosy at the Saints, because I know Mr. McManus isn't too happy with him leaving, which is hilarious as a Warrington fan.
We have a new rule in the NRL, and that's the six again rule. I don't know what to make of this at all. It's all a little bit bizarre in terms of what it's about, how it's all going to flow into the English game. Dennis, are you a fan of it? Fan of sort of getting the ball rolling again, carrying on with the game?
Yeah, big fan of that. I've watched a couple of games now and it looks pretty good. I think I read an article, one of the halfbacks, or it was a discussion point on the NRL about how it, you know, it really gives people like George Williams, yeah, the opportunity to sort of like, you know, play off the cuff and obviously, you know, find the gaps and things like that with the tiring and, you know, back in defence. But in contrast to that, Blake Austin put something out on Instagram this week where he was describing he doesn't like the idea of it and he'd rather stick to what it is, which, you know, for a player, it is supposed to be a creative option, is suddenly saying, oh, I don't really fancy it. I don't understand that.
Dave, what do you make of it, mate?
Yeah, I've not really seen a lot of it, to be fair, but in principle, it does sound like a good idea. And again, you know, it's quickening up the games, it's making things, it's just, at the moment, they're only using the one ref, aren't they, in Australia because of the COVID situation. So whether they'll go back to two, we're not too sure. So it's all down to the referee's interpretation at the end of the day. And it's whether, you know, the referees are consistent. So we'd have to trial it, you know, but I think it's got to go, because if they're doing it in Australia, got to really start doing it in Super League and then obviously bring it into the international game for the World Cup, because we're all not singing on the same hymn sheet at the moment. The only strange thing that I've heard about it was that it was sort of an idea at the start of the season, but they decided not to go with it. And then they did a couple of rounds and then they've gone, you know what, let's bring it in. And I always thought it was something to do with the COVID situation, but they said it's not. It's just something that's been ideated and they've just decided to use it. So just a strange time to bring it in, really. But that's why, you know, if we brought it in halfway through our Super League season, maybe wait until, you know, next year and then see how it goes next year.
Yeah, I think you're right in many respects there, that if we waited till the start of next season, then any slight discrepancies with how it's working could iron themselves out. But broadly, I'm in favour. If someone's just putting the hand on the ball, you don't want to stop for a penalty. Just say, back to zero, off you go again. It's just where that line is. Do you want actually the chance to go for 2 points and actually have a penalty? or just another set of six.
You're our Mr. Hicks of the show, Sam. So I'm going to ask you this question. Right? So let's say, right, Warrington are losing to Wigan. It's 11 points to 10. Wigan are 11 points. Wire are on 10 points. We've got 10 seconds on the clock. We're parked in front of the sticks. We're getting up to play the ball, and someone puts the hand on the ball. And we can get all the players back while we have another six. And we don't get the opportunity anymore to kick for a goal to win the game 12-10, 12-11. Yeah. So I don't understand what happens in that situation.
Exactly. And I've not, on the 2 weeks I've been watching so far, I've not seen that happen yet.
But it's going to happen.
It's got to. It's when you're halfway or coming away from your own line, it's brilliant. Back to zero, off you go.
In that situation, you can trade your captain's challenge in to take the 2 points.
I've also seen if you flick the legs and actually make the guy fall back to his knees, they're giving full penalties, aren't they? It only seems to be for these slight niggly, trying to slow you down 50-50 penalties, which had become a bit of a blight on our game, actually.
They're trying to stop the wrestling, aren't they? That's the idea behind the rule. They're trying to stop the wrestling.
Interesting to see, though. It will happen at some point, and then we'll see what happens. Do they give a penalty, or do they just play on and lose the game? Tricky one. COVID scrums, everyone. We'll go to our scientific expert, and that's Dennis. Oh, you're more chance of catching COVID in a scrum than you have in a tackle?
Well, I've looked at this, and I think that, you know, when in a scrum, it should be actually a better situation because you're near the rear of the person in front. And, you know, when you look at the social distancing now, they're talking about, you know, not being in certain positions within a 2 metre area. So having your head near someone's arse is actually more protective, I've worked out. So it's absolute nonsense.
I mean, we've wanted scrums to disappear for years. I mean, it's only an opportunity to bring the forwards all in for that one play and give the backs an opportunity. But it does seem bizarre. Is it just a rumour? It's not actually going to happen. Sam, do you know anything on it?
What did you say, Dennis? A load of bollocks?
Well, you'd be closer to the bollocks in that situation, wouldn't you? Because you got your head right under.
I think if they're really considering that genuinely now, if they're saying you shouldn't be doing scrums because it's not safe, well, you shouldn't be playing rugby. And I actually think if they do away with scrums, that would be a retrograde step. I want actually people to be properly bound in scrums so that they can't get out and give actual space to the backs. It's becoming a bit of a farce, a scrum.
Yeah, I covered it on Tackle Bags, if you remember, reducing the number of people in the scrum. So that would be opportunity. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when I knew we were going to be chatting about this, I've just put two words: seems silly. And again, the same reason
SS. As
before, because basically, you know, it's silly. If you can tackle somebody and they're coming at you straight away, and there's a good chance that they could pass saliva or anything, whereas you're going to be safe around the ankles or around the backside. The only main worry for me is at the moment, for people who aren't in your bubble, as they call it, you're not allowed to be that close to their ass, so you get fined £1,000, don't you, these days? As long as they don't, unless you live in your own house. So no sex between different houses, isn't it, or something?
You're not still doing that, are you, Dave?
Can't now, can I? Can't afford the money.
What, for the sex, or...?
Exactly, yeah. Past that, I've been married 20 years this year, so, yeah. The dog's getting more action than I am this week.
Oh, dear. Don't know what was on in that household.
So what's happening with rugby union? They're obviously not going to play at all then with all those moles and all that kissing and cuddling going on. It's never going to come back if they make this rule.
I don't think there's any date, is there? They've been very, very quiet, the rugby football union. They're not really saying anything, or not that I can see. It just seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth.
I saw Benji Marshall got fined for kissing one of the...
The reporters.
I think she was from Channel 7 and he gave her a little kiss and he's been fined. Yet I saw Cameron Smith kiss a lad who scored a try the other night and nothing's been said. They were all kissing and cuddling after he scored. It's just one rule for one rule for another, isn't it? There is a rumour that started, and that is that Matty Davis is possibly heading to the Catalans. Dave, would you be sorry to see him go? I mean, I'm a fan of Matty Davis.
Oh, he's got a headband, so here we go. Yeah, there they go. Very much.
You know what? You just pissed on me chips there, Dennis, because that was exactly what I was going to say. It was basically the more players wearing headbands in your team, the better the team must be. You know,
when, we're up to Blake Austin.
Well, when he wore a headband against Hull, he scored 4 tries, didn't he? So,
yeah.
Enough said.
Last year.
Good stat.
Blake Austin when he first wore it. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the Matty Davis thing. I mean, I don't know whether, again, you've mentioned in previous podcasts that, you know, you believe he's a little bit small, but every time I see him, he really does put 110% in. He's always like a little ankle biter. Again, he can play in numerous positions in the forwards, so he's handy to have. But is there some nice money? Does he like a bit of sunshine? You know, I don't know. You know, what's the draw over there? I don't think he's got any sort of previous with Steve McNamara, has he? So I don't think it's like he's playing for a former coach or anything.
Maybe he can.
And do you know what, Dave? Do you know what, Dave? I agree with you. He plays his weight, doesn't he? He's worth his weight in gold in that sense. So I think the issue we've had is not really with Matt Davis. It's about the 3 or 4 players of a similar ilk. We've got him, Harvey Levett, Lewis Johnson, all of the similar. And you don't want them all. It's about trying to find which one or two you're going to keep.
Well, correct. And I think at the moment, I think Steve Price has shown his cards with Harvey. I mean, obviously, he's let him go out on again. So whether Harvey's at the bottom of that pile, I'm not too sure. But again, if he had this big season with Hull KR, Harvey could be making his way back.
Didn't I see earlier in the week him being linked with Salford?
Possibly. But now he's been linked with a lot of teams. You know, he's going to he's hopefully going to put in some good performances for Hull KR. I hope he does well. He's a good local lad. But yeah, out of the three, I just keep Davis. I really do like him. But sometimes, you know, a little bit like when Benjamin Julien left, you know, he was of a similar ilk as well. Obviously, he was French. Yes. So he wanted to go back. You know, he wanted to go back over there. It was better for him probably. But you know, unless Matty Davis has got some French family that we don't know about.
Good comparison. But of course, it could all be salary cap related. I've actually been contacted by a couple of people wanting to know a bit more about that. Not, but it's about how to make the salary cap go further, and the dispensations you can have, or if we call them legitimate fiddles on the salary cap. So I looked in a bit more detail and had a wonderful 500-page document that I started reading through about the operational rules for 20.
Come on, Sankey, get on with it.
A Warrington fan asked, is it not just the first 25 players that count on the cap? And the answer is sort of. The highest 25 players count automatically, then other players count unless they are eligible to play under 21 or they're paid less than 20 grand. So in Warrington's case, we've got Keenan Brand, Nathan Roebuck, Josh Hewlett, Riley Dean, Kabula, Danny Walker, Lewis Johnson, Ellis Robson, all not counting on the salary cap, but some of them will do next year if they stay. So perhaps someone like Davis is being let go because we've got other people coming onto the cap in the coming year. I've also got a St. Helens fan. He was asking, he thought the marquee counted at 175 grand. Well, actually, it does only count as 150 grand. It's only players that are paid 175 grand or more that can be classed as marquees. And finally, Luther. There was confusion when Luther signed about did he count as zero?
There's been confusion whilst he's been playing.
Well, yeah. But Carl said, no, he doesn't count last year. And Carl's right. He counts zero for year one. But if he signed after the 1st of February, that year doesn't count as year one. So we've got Luther as zero for 2 years.
Well, I just hope it all... I mean, at the end of the day, you just want everyone to be happy, don't you? Everyone to find a family, to be loved somewhere, and just to crack on. Which brings me on, actually. Has anyone been watching the new series of Long Lost Families?
Tavina McCall. In this week's Long Lost Tactics, We go in search of a middle-aged man's birth tactic he's never known. When Steve Price was a baby, he was abandoned at the side of the road in primrose and blue blanket, with just a warm baby's bottle by his side and a bag of empty tactics.
Well, the earliest memory I have of being abandoned was during a cross-country run. I just ran out of path, realised I had no resilience. I went home and I said to my family of free-flowing rugby, "Am I adopted?" To which they replied, "Yes." Bit of a bummer, really.
Even though Steve grew up in a family of free-flowing rugby, he's keen to find his real birth tactics. And when Steve's search went cold, that's where we came in. After researching back through numerous Rothmans end-of-year rugby league backs, and with recent invention of the term a player's DNA, we found a match. Could this really be Steve's birth tactic? I'm on my way to meet Steve to give him the good news.
Came in.
Do you mean coming, Steve?
Oh, sorry, darling. I always get that the wrong way round. How's the traffic? It's normally awfully round here. Bridge foot when you're coming through at Winnick Road. I mean, it can be an absolute shocker, and then you go through that second roundabout.
Steve, it's all right, Steve. Sit down. Thanks for seeing me, Stephen. Steve, I'm pleased to say we found your birth tactic.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah, we have. Her name is Resilience.
Resilience?
Yeah, Resilience.
Oh, gee, as much as my adopted birth tactic is free-flowing rugby, I always knew I didn't fit in. Resilience, how you say?
Resilience.
Resilience?
Resilience.
Oh, that's amazing.
Unfortunately, Steve, your birth tactic of resilience died in 2012, exactly like the archaic tactic did in the game of rugby league around the same time. But we've uncovered a half-brother tactic.
Oh, really? A half-brother tactic, you say?
Yes. Would you like to see a photo?
Yes, please. Yeah, please.
He's called, if all else fails, kick across field to Toby King tactic.
Whoa. A tactic even looks like me.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, but why's he got a stepladder?
It's hoped once the lockdown is over, Steve will meet up in August with his half-brother tactic. No doubt time and time and time and time again. My name's Davina McCall. On next week's Long Lost Tactics, young Matty Russell goes in search of a catching game he never had.
Well, I have to say, I'm proud of that one. I think that was right up there with Fake or Fortune. Sam, did you like that one, mate? You're a keen follower of Long Lost
Tactics? I'm not a keen follower of the show, but I thought, you know, Davina McCall just came to life then. I thought she was actually standing there in front of me. Not.
Dave, Davina McCall or Michaela Strachan?
Michaela Strachan, because I used to like a bit of stock, Waterman.
Yeah,
so, has to be Strachan for me.
Okay, last week we gave Daniel the task of picking his best wire wingers, but as we all know, tries cannot be scored without the groundwork. So, this time out, it's the Warrington props, as it's left with Daniel to feel their muscles. Or as Dick Emery would say,
"Oh, you are awful, but I like you."
Ooh.
This week I'm talking about the dirty grafters in the middle of the park, the ones who really get things done. Yes, it's the prop forwards. I've been asked to pick two starters and two interchange options of my time of watching Warrington. So, there was no place to start other than Adrian Morley, who made 173 appearances in the Primrose and Blue between 2007 and 13. A phenomenal prop forward and surely the best that the Wire have seen since the inception of Super League. He was a mainstay of the team for such a long period of time and led Wire to our first ever league leader shield in 2011. Morley defined everything you'd want from a prop: energy, work rate, tackling, strength, pace. No doubt that he was going to be my first choice. And lining up next to him, I've got Gareth Carvell, who spent a lot of time in the same side as Morley. Carvell, again, 2009 to 2013, so not quite as long. 134 appearances for the club, scoring 19 tries, which is not a bad rate for a prop, and was part of the brilliant Tony Smith side that really should have won a lot more between the years of 2011 and 2013. When I watch some of that side back, you look at the creativity of the likes of Breers and Hodgson and the two Monaghan brothers, but actually so much of that was enabled by the work of the forwards, Morley and Carvell being the two primary sources of metres and graft and work rate. So then onto my interchange options, and I start with Mike Cooper, current player of course, who is now up to, would you believe, 222 appearances for the Warrington Wolves. That's over two stints, the first one between 2006 and 13, before returning to the club in 2017, and he's recently signed a new contract as well. Cooper is one of the most consistent players in Super League, I feel, and I think he's up there with the likes of David Fifita and the two St Helens lads as among the best props in the competition at the moment. He's very, very consistent. He very rarely has a bad game. His meter making is always up to standard, and he's a good tackler as well. Now, I think a lot of people would expect me to pick Chris Hill. Now, some people who know me may know that I'm not the biggest fan of Chris Hill, although he has been a great servant to the club over the years, but particularly in the last couple of seasons, I feel his game has dropped a couple of levels. I picked someone who I have a personal affinity to, which is Ashton Sims. So, not at the club for as long as some of the other guys that I've talked about, only 2015 to 2017, so just a couple of years, 90 appearances. So, didn't quite hit the 100 mark, but I really liked Sims. I thought he gave plenty of goal forward, passion, energy. Sometimes I find myself watching the thing where he gets mic'd up for the game against Lee Centurions in the Challenge Cup, and it's really interesting hearing his leadership and drive and determination and grit. I love hearing that. So if you haven't seen that video, by the way, I'd highly recommend it. So that's why I picked Sims for my final bench spot. I feel that prop forward and forwards in general is one of the areas that Warrington are suffering in recent years. We heard Chris Riley mention that as well. Is there a lack of grunt in that forward pack? Is there enough of that? And I think that the likes of Morley and Carvell have never been properly replaced. So that's why they were the two automatic picks, with Cooper and Sims on the bench. So those are my properly good props.
Well, he's gone very sort of recent in his four that he's chosen. I think he's chosen a good four. We'll start with you, Dennis. Who would your four be? Going back in all the time you've watched The Wire, where would you put your money, mate?
Well, having looked back in great detail this week and research and looking at stats, I think, you know, you can't get beyond Les Boyd for a starter for 10. I think he was one of my favourites, along with Bob Jackson of that era. Those two were almost like, yeah, they're rough and ready, and they'd always get you going forward. And then now, you know, I think of later times, I suppose Morley and now Philbin, he's my man going forward. Great Britain international, highest paid prop in years to come.
Mm. Dave, would you agree with this, or are you going to actually talk sense and not bollocks that Dennis has just spoken about?
Oh, God. No, I mean, I partly agree with him. I mean, Les Boyd sort of was just before I started watching Warrington. I started in 88, so I managed to get to see sort of his second stint when he came back over a little bit. But for me, I fully agree with Daniel. I think Morley and Carvell were the first two names that come into my head. And I think as a pair as well, you know, they work so well. In those early Challenge Cup wins. Two great blokes as well off the field. Got to meet them a couple of times. I stalked Adrian Morley for an autograph the week before the Challenge Cup final in 2009, because I had an idea that if I got my shirt signed by him, of course, for years to come, that shirt may be worth a bit of money. So I was thinking up ahead, and I thought, if he's the challenge,
what was the stalking? What was involved with the stalking?
Well, what happened was he was doing a book signing on Waterstones, but I couldn't be asked buying his book. So I thought, if I just wait on the car park, and when he pulls up, I'll just get him in the car park before he goes into Waterstones. So I'm always thinking.
So he sees a nutter running across the car park with a headband on.
I was before headbands then. I wasn't into my headband. I was just a big fat lad then. Yeah, I was about an 18 and a half stone lad. He was scared of me, you know, seeing me coming across. Gareth Carvel as well. Again, this come down to autographs and signing. The squad builder used to do a team signing. So when my daughter was just 3 years of age, I took her down to get a picture with all the players and, of course, the Challenge Cup. 2010, and because she's a girl, I bought her a little Warrington Wolves pink handbag from the club shop before we went in to keep her occupied. And lo and behold, we're queuing up for these autographs. I hadn't actually seen which player was sat on the corner as we walked in, and she's having a conversation with Gareth Carvel about pink handbags. So I thought, what a top bloke.
Well,
so
I'd just like to say, actually, at this point, we don't advocate child labour on the What Would Brian Bevan Say podcast, just for all our listeners there.
So who have we gone for, Dave? We've got two so far, have we?
So Morley and Carvel for me, definitely. Going back a little bit further, Bob Jackson, I agree with Dennis. At top man, I mean, the guy used to do the bins in the week. And then, of course, he could also play second row as well. So he was a utility forward.
Yeah.
You know, he did 10 years at Warrington. He played at Wembley. We also captained them in the Premiership final against Wigan when they got beat, but we won't say too much about that. They also played when they beat Halifax in the Premiership and was man of the match in the Lancashire Cup final as well. So top man. And again, one of my big memories about Bob Jackson was, despite ever how cold it was, Sunday night, he'd always be in the Carlton Club with a pair of cut-off denim shorts on, even in the winter. So hard as nails.
We had a mate outside Times Square, and Bob Jackson got him in a headlock, and he didn't wash his neck for about 3 weeks, did he? Because he didn't keep it on. That much of a hero.
I mean, final one, number four, was I think his big. Player who gets a little bit forgotten in Warrington times with all these big name Australians that come over is Danny Nutley. Come over in 1998. Daryl van der Velde brought him over from the Queensland Crushers. Yeah, again, 106 appearances, and you know, what a player. And just to quote Daryl van der Velde, by the way, he called him, he was built as the same build as Les Boyd. Very aggressive, high work rate, and a go-forward player. And I think he was absolutely right. And he said the Warrington players, if he was half as good as Les Boyd, would actually enjoy him. And he was one of my favourite forwards. I think we had so many good Aussies in the sort of the late 90s and early 2000s with Danny Farrer, Andrew G come over, you know, Alfie Langer was there. And Danny Nutley went a little bit off the radar. But he went back to Australia. He come back a year later and he got in the Super League Dream Team playing for Castleford. He also got into the Queensland side as well, the state of origin 2005. So I think we all forget about him. And he was one of my favourite players. And also, he was hard as nails and he loved a good scrap as well.
Very good. Always important. Sam, can you top that, mate?
Maybe not as passionately, but yes, I think I can. The best four I've seen play all together was probably 2013 when we had Morley Carvel, as previously mentioned, but being backed up by Cooper and Hill, but all time that I've seen, Les Boyd, Steve Roach, who no one's mentioned, can't believe that, Adrian Morley, and to make up the four, probably Chris Hill from a few years ago.
Well, it's a full house. I've gone Les Boyd as well. Best prop I've ever seen. We talked about Steve Anderson being on the podcast a few weeks ago and saying that, you know, what Warrington's missing at the moment is a little bit of mongrel. I think you've touched on it there, Dave, with Danny Nutley, who certainly had a bit of that aggression in him. What we'd give for a Les Boyd now, just to put some sort of people with a bit of fear in the opposition that we've got a prop on the field like Les Boyd. So Les Boyd, definitely tick him off every time. I don't go for Adrian Morley, unfortunately, because I don't think Adrian Morley's better time was at Warrington. I actually think it was at the Roosters when he played second row. So I see Morley as a second row forward. I think he moved to prop towards the end of his career because he was getting a bit long in the tooth. No doubt about it. Our best forward in the past probably 15, 20 years. But he doesn't make my top four. My other two, I've gone for Steve Roach as well because he was a prop forward. Again, formidable. He didn't do that much work, Roach, because no one ever wanted to run at him. Alongside him, I'd put Les Davidson, who you could say was a second row forward.
Yes, of course,
but boy,
yes.
Les Davidson could swing them. My God, you didn't want to mess with Les Davidson. So they're my three, Boyd, Davidson and Roach. My fourth one is someone that I used to think got bums off seats, although he couldn't fit his arse on the seat, and that was Pat Pawaza. I've never seen a player the size of Pat Pawaza when he played for Warrington in the 80s. He must have been 25 stone and about 6'8". So he'd be my fourth. The one that I just left off, because I don't think he was consistent enough to be in the top four, was probably Gary Chambers. And everyone thinks, well, Gary Chambers was Gary Chambers. But there was about 6 months at Warrington when Gary Chambers used to take the ball up twice in every set of six. And he got injured and he just sort of put him back on the where he was prior to him reaching that that pinnacle when he was right at the top of his game. Okay, Sam, following on from Daniel's props, if I were to use that well-known barbecue sausage analogy, and I quote, should we take away the sizzle from each of Warrington's props and focus only on their statistical sausages? Which Wolves props have a recipe for gourmet sausage in their go forward and which are mainly made up of lacklustre run of ingredient of just offal, cock and balls?
That well-known barbecue sausage sales analogy. Yeah, just trips off the tongue, doesn't it? Just trips off the tongue. I think
just before we start, Sam, just pork or beef when it comes to a sausage, Dave, what do you like on your barbecue?
I like a bit of both, to be fair, pork and beef together.
Dennis?
Mix it up.
Well, I'm down in Glastonbury, so I like a bespoke gourmet lamb sausage.
Well yeah, we have a very similar one to a chorizo sausage down here, made with many different spines.
Shut up. Come on, Sam, back to you, mate.
Pork and leek from Lynn Butcher's, very nice. I think we touched on it with Les Boyd. We touched on it a few weeks ago about the lack of aggression in our forwards. And it's not that any one of them has got a problem. It's the four together. So, the three main ones. We've got Chris Hill. People have had a little bit of a go at, but year after year after year, he's consistently performing. He's 6'2". It's almost 18 stone. He's not wanting size.
Sam, I don't want his Tinder profile. Come on, give me some stats.
Have you noticed that all the stats came with pictures? Jesus.
Which way do I swipe?
Well, 31 international caps, Chris Hill. You're not a bad player if you're getting called up 31 times for England and Great Britain. But 2020 form so far, got sent off against Wigan, but he's only given two penalties away. He's made 130 tackles, missed just four, but he's only broken two tackles. And that's where I see the issue with Chris Hill at the minute. He's not breaking many tackles. His work rate is brilliant. His consistency is brilliant, but he doesn't break a tackle.
Dave, we've spoken about this a few times on the podcast about Chris Hill, that maybe the captaincy wasn't the best thing for him. If he went back to focusing on his game and not having to keep running up to the ref and wasting 100 metres in his legs every match. I mean, do you see him as a captain? Would you prefer to have seen Widdop take over the role?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly this year. I don't think there was anybody in previous years who maybe could have took on that role. But again, I feel a little bit sorry for Chris Hill because when he came through, as Sam mentioned earlier, you know, he came through and he was sort of the backup prop to Morley and Carvel. He'd come off the bench, you know, he'd make a big impact. He would break the tackles. He had a good bit of pace on him as well, a lot of good leg drive. And then as those players retired or left the club, it was left to Chris Hill to sort of carry that burden a little bit. And, you know, I think he's a good captain. He's passionate about Warrington. He's, you know, he seems to be somebody that everybody respects. I'm not sure what he's like, of course, in the dressing rooms, but, you know, I'm sure, you know, the players all respect him. I just think now he's 32 years of age and, you know, to put your body on the line, you know, Chris Hill does so many minutes or has done so many minutes in the past. You know, he'd be doing 60, 70 minutes. He'd be playing the full first half, you know, and again, it's just probably a little bit of wear and tear. You mentioned about John Bateman and Luke Thompson, possibly. The NRL, if you continue to just pound your body like that, it's going to be wear and tear. But because he's the club captain, he's the focal point. And again, you know, Warrington fans can be a little bit fickle sometimes. I'm one of the worst for it. Is, you know, once you get one of those players, you've got to have a scapegoat, haven't you? And I think over recent years, Chris Hill's maybe become a little bit of a scapegoat. But as Sam said, he's only given away two penalties. But you remember the one he gave away at Wigan, where he then got sent off, which I still think was a harsh decision, really. It's probably a yellow, if that isn't, you know, early on in the season, first game. But again, it's on TV. Everybody remembers it. And again, he's always that fug Chris Hill, and he's sort of like getting this reputation that I think is a little bit unjust. But is Chris Hill's time at Warrington coming to an end? Possibly due to age, and that's all. You know, because yeah. I say he's been a great servant. And when you sign someone from the Championship that nobody really knows anything about, you know, what a great signing from Tony Smith.
Our second prop really is Mike Cooper. Similar age, he's a year younger than Hill, similar size, 7 full caps, plus he's done some England nights, 221 games for Warrington, NRL experience, he went down under and did very well, struggled with a couple of back issues in the last couple of years, but seems to have got over him this year, maybe down to his diet. This year so far, it's been very noticeable for his offloads. The only person in the league with more offloads than Cooper this year is Sonny Bill. But again, is another one, like Hill, for me, that week in, week out, is giving you a 7 out of 10 minimum performance. And he's signed for another 2 years, Cooper. He's here till November 22.
Again, you know, the only thing I would say with Mike Cooper is, you know, he is doing a lot of minutes this year. And he had to take on a lot of the brunt when Hill was suspended at the start of the
Correct.
Season.
Exactly.
After that, so and he did, and you know, you can't knock him if you were sort of giving a sort of a player of the season on the season so far. Mike Cooper's got to be in the top three for sure, you know, and he deserves a new contract. I don't think his legs are going maybe as much as Chris Hill's, but we'll soon see. And I just don't want it that. Next season, that maybe is one season too many for Mike Cooper as well. But I think we'll be all right with Mike.
If we move on to Dennis's favourite, Joe Philbin, he's only 25. I looked at his size. He's 5'10" and 16 stone. I thought that was you, Rob. 5'10", or were you 5'9½? Can't quite remember. But it's real emergence in the last 2 years, Joe Philbin. Speed, aggression, running with the ball, impact off the bench. Perhaps, as he himself mentioned when he was interviewed recently, perhaps he's not got the other attributes to his game yet with offloading or sidestepping, but you can't argue with his aggressive running. He's averaging over 7 metres per carry this year, and he's contracted to the end of next year as well.
We've got the three there. You know, we've spoken about the stats and everything else, but I'm seeing no mongrel in those three lads. I'm sorry, but I'm seeing nothing there that puts the fear of God into
it. I would agree with you, Rob. I have no problem with any of those three. No problem at all.
But all together? But all together?
Yeah. So what perhaps we're lacking, perhaps what's gone from the team with the retirement of Benny Westwood, or the Benny Westwood from 5 years ago, is that, and I'm not talking about someone who gives away penalties. I'm talking about, as you mentioned 5 or 10 minutes ago, someone who puts the fear of God into the opposition. Now, our fourth prop, perhaps over the last 18 months, has been Sitaleki. Now, when he runs, and he runs at full pelt, he puts people on their backsides, and he's got some quite... And he's got headband, yes, Dave, yeah. And he's got some, he runs with aggression. He runs and puts fear into people. But he doesn't seem to play more than 10 minutes a spell.
But he's not a bully, is he? He's getting that fear from the fact that he's such a big bloke, you know. But he's not got that aggressiveness in him. He's a lovely guy off the field.
Yes, the trouble is, you're all talking a load of bollocks. And what you need is someone like me to come in with a theory or a statistical thing. So I've been drawing the Boyd scale. And what we need is, this is a Boyd unit, 1 to 14, where these players sit on this scale. That's what you need to do so that you can actually, you know, read more into the stats than just these very boring vanilla sort of
stats that you're reeling off. So I think mine probably works better. And I have got Akwala on the scale there. He's around about an 8. But when you think about it, who in the game is actually could get up above 10 on the Boyd scale? Ah,
well, you're right there, Dennis. And I hate agreeing with you. But I'm going to. I would not use the word vanilla about our three main props, Hill, Cooper and Philbin. But they are much of a muchness. And does any of them stand out as someone who's going to get, at this minute, and maybe over the past 18 months, as someone who's going to be a starting prop for Great Britain or England? Mm. No, they don't. Mm. And that could be the difference between a team that is second or third in the league or who actually wins the Super League Grand Final.
None of them are bad prop forwards, but we need a bit of this grunt. Rob, give us your grunt. Jesus, what it sounds like.
Well, the reason I'm doing that is because I've just seen the three other options that we've got, and that's sort of my feeling about the three others, and that's Leilani Latu, who at some point we might actually get him to see play a game of rugby league. Kabula, Wigan got rid of Kabula for a reason. He's shown no strength at Warrington, I don't think. And then we've got, of course, obviously Lewis Johnson as well, that we're sort of always waiting for. And he did get that run in the team, but is he a prop? I think he's more of a second row, isn't he?
Well, you've got Johnson and Clark, who are second rows, but could be, when we're short, get pushed forward to fill that fourth prop space, don't they?
Yeah.
My take on this, and it's a little bit left field from the Akwala thing, is obviously as a fan watching him and people, the first thing you say when you mention Akwala is, oh, he doesn't do enough minutes, oh, he doesn't do enough carries, he doesn't do enough this, he doesn't do enough that. But he's obviously being coached by our coaching team. So, and they're the people who are bringing him off the bench at certain points and taking him back off again. So, I don't think it's that Akwala can't do the minutes or can't do the carries. I think just maybe it's a coaching thing. You know, if Steve Price left the end of the season, who knows?
I'm in complete agreement with you. I see him come on and put people on the run, and he's carrying 9 metres per carry. And then all of a sudden you think, he's on fire today. The next minute, the trainer's on, pulling him off the back to...
Well, they must know. Surely they must know what his stamina's like. They purely have not realised that they're only leaving him on for 10 minutes every game because it's a mistake.
Or are they coaching, as Dave said, to say, you know what, sitter, you've got 10 minutes. Go on and give it everything for 10 minutes so it doesn't matter if you burn yourself out.
That was exactly Dennis's strategy in Legends, wasn't it, Dennis? Give it a good 10 minutes, work the club, and then go and sit in the corner.
Yeah, that's the way. Probably the best bet. Did all my good work from that little corner.
It's time for Curry of the Week. And please, anyone suffering from anxiety on this section coming to an end, you don't need to worry, because it turns out there's over 1,000 different curry dishes. So strap on in. We're running with this section until 2037. Dennis, what curry have you got for us this week, mate? What are you thinking?
Well, following our merry-go-round discussion last week and the fact that, you know, it's been rumoured that Curry could be on his way to Wigan, there is also an alignment with a curry pie, obviously connecting Wigan and Curry, probably made with a suet crust pastry because it's full of fat that's probably been we've all suffered with during the lockdown. So I think something along the lines of a curry pie.
Well, they certainly like eating their humble pie. So this week's Curry of the Week is a curry humble pie.
Today's curry dish is humble curry pie.
Oh, have we lost again? Oh, I think I'll sneak out the back. I preferred it when we used to cheat on the salary cap because I'm a spineless Wigan bastard.
Dave, would you be sorry to see Benjamin head over to Wigan?
Oh, it's a difficult one. He has been sort of a great player, but as you've mentioned in previous weeks on the podcast, have we seen the best of him? it's just one of those, isn't it? It's whether it's a risk, and you know, if there's somebody who's going to come in who's better and going to put in, you know, better shift and maybe even a little bit younger, a little bit fitter, then I'd say yes. But just depends who they're going to bring in to replace him, really. And again, it could all come down to the salary cap fiddling, as Sam would say. You know, obviously we believe he's on decent money at the moment, but you know, would he want to take a reduced contract? Obviously, Luke Thompson didn't, did he? So, and you know, being his right mind to turn that contract down as well.
You're a big fan of Wigan, though, aren't you, Dave? That's the thing. So you're quite happy to see him.
He's got a red and white headband on today, hasn't he? To be honest.
Yeah. The best thing about the commentary, which we'll come on to later, is when they beat Wigan, because there's nothing, no better sight in rugby league than watching that Wigan walk. And luckily, with the hospital radio, we get to do witness games as well. And I actually got to do a game where witness beat Wigan, and that was even better than Warrington doing it, because they weren't expecting to lose that game, and they were gone with at least 35 minutes to go in that game. Brilliant, can't beat it.
Talking to hospital radio, Dave. So tell us about your setup, mate. How does it work then? I mean, what time do you get into the ground? Who you sort of broadcasting to?
We broadcast from the hospital. We go out to the patients via the hospital units, which are by the bedsides. We also go out online now. We actually did our first online game, and then the lockdown kicked in, so we've done one match. and that's actually going out. So maybe it's my fault, but the so we obviously have a website, www.radiogeneral.co.uk, where you can listen via the website. You can listen via TuneIn as well, which is an app. You just have to make sure that you say Radio General Warrington, because if you just put Radio General in, you get an Argentinian radio station.
Oh, that sounds good.
Part of their rugby covers is better than ours, but the music isn't quite as good. So, yeah, obviously careful. And again, if you've got one of those Alexa units, you can just say, Alexa, play Radio General Warrington. And hopefully mine hasn't just gone on. So you can play that now. So that's how we're set up. We cover just the home games at the moment for Warrington, and also for Widnes as well. We've been doing that for over 60 years at Warrington, Widnes being over the last 10 years or so. And basically, we have a phone line that goes in, you know, straight into the ground, which we pay for. Again, not dead cheap, but, you know, it's the way we can do the matches. I get into the ground usually a couple of hours before, because the main thing you've got to do is get there first in the food queue. Because I don't get an invite off Sam, you see. Sam doesn't invite me to all these nice restaurants and stuff before the game.
This is a professional, Dennis. Listen to this. 2 hours before a match, he's in the ground doing his research, working out all those little intricate bits that you need to know. And there's you getting pissed up in the hot pole.
Well, he's eating all the bloody food, isn't he? That's all he's going for, Dave. I've sat behind Dave while he's been commentating, and I can say that I was very impressed, Dave, with your commentary.
Thank you very much.
We had Dave Woods on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he said he's not biased at all in his commentary. Doesn't quite seem the same with you, though, Dave, in what we've heard.
No, but the good thing about working for Warrington Hospital is he can be pretty much as biased as you want. I try and, it's really strange, because when I used to stand in the southwest corner with a few double pinters, I was always very critical of referees and opposition players. And now I'm watching it with a little bit less alcohol inside me and trying to be as neutral as possible. But it's a good way to watch the game, and you're actually watching the match. It's a really different experience commentating, because when Warrington score, the fan inside me takes over a little bit, especially when it's a match winner like the Sandow drop goal at Salford, which is actually the first game I ever commentated on my own. No one else fancied a Thursday night in the rain at Salford.
They missed out, didn't they?
I'll do that one. And then at half time, they were getting battered, and you thought, why am I coming in on a Thursday? I've been properly stitched up here doing this match. And Warrington's comeback that day was brilliant and complete. And I think that just showed on the commentary. But, you know, I think sometimes, you know, you can commentate on another team. We had a late drama against St. Helens many years ago with Jordan Turner scoring a try in the corner. And we'll listen to the commentary back on that, and you could hear me getting a little bit excited with it because I'm just getting carried away with the whole of what's going on the game.
So basically, you're a Saints fan. That's what you're saying, Dave, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, they always win at Aliwell, don't they, usually? Apart from this year, that's why I was really confident.
It's because I was there, Dave.
I know. And I should have not gone with my head. I should have gone with my heart, really. But no, you know, the hardest game that I've had to commentate is any time we play Widnes in the derby because we cover both. We cover Radio Halton as well. So I do have to try and be as non-Warrington based as possible with that one. And sometimes it is difficult, especially seeing as I think my commentary record on Warrington Widnes games is I think I've only had one defeat, which was a good Thursday at Widnes a good few many years ago. So we've not gone too bad on that. And now Widnes have been relegated. So we don't get to do many Widnes Warrington games anymore. Mm.
Dave, I'm surprised that you don't round off your commentary in the press room at the end of the match, asking some very, you know, pertinent and hard-hitting questions like I do. Is there a reason for that?
You know what? I'm a little bit shy of asking because I don't really want to ask the wrong question. And I think you've got the fellas there from the newspapers. You know, we usually have a friend of the podcast, Mr. Walker, from the Mirror. Usually got... you know, you're Warrington Guardian, Matt, and a couple of, you know, your other journalists. And I just think they're asking the same questions that I'm asking anyway. So I just like to sit and watch them, to be fair. And, you know, now Dennis is in there as well. He's just jumped above me in the pecking order. So I am a little bit shy. I did sort of break me duck on interviewing a couple of players after a match a couple of years ago, and actually interviewed Rob Burrow after... we'd put 50 on them, and they were struggling a little bit at Leeds at the time, and there was talk that they may sort of drop into relegation. And Rob Burrow, after just playing 80 minutes, getting 50 put on him, was an absolute gentleman, you know, and everything that's happening with him at the moment with the motor neuron disease and that, I just want to say that, you know, if anyone's going to give any money to anybody to try and, you know, raise awareness or anything, then anything that Rob Burrow was involved in, then, you know, it's definitely something to be in because what an absolute gent, you know. And I was so nervous talking to him because I thought, what do you ask a bloke who's just playing the team who's just been absolutely walked off the park? But he was really brutally honest. I asked whether he thought Leeds could get relegated at the time, and he said, you know, if they carry on as they are, then yeah. he was you know, really brutally honest. So that's a good thing. But no, I am a little bit shy when it comes to that.
You need someone like Rob in the background with some really hard hitting questions, like, you know, why don't you ask Steve Price when he's getting a taxi to the airport? Yeah.
I know you've always phoned Rob up, you see, so Rob gives you the some of the ammunition, but he can say that when he's a few
14,000 miles away. Do you have any sort of lines ready to go, Dave, in your commentary? Any, like Kenneth Wolstenholme had that classic line when England won the winner in the World Cup, and I know some commentators do. Is it just all off the cuff, mate, or have you got a few up your sleeve ready to go?
No, just wing it as it goes along. There's always a few things that you have in the back of your mind. I mean, I'm not one for a lot of stats. You know, I'll sort of work out how many tries and goals people have scored during the year, but I'm not one for all these stats and caveats or statistics, as people use it. I'd rather just go on, you know, little things, and maybe use a few sort of workings on the names when they score. I mean, we did a game a few years ago, myself and Dave Parkinson, I've got to give big raps to Dave Parkinson, Adrian Jackson and Mike Cooper. We have a Mike Cooper as well, who's been commentating for over 40 years for the radio station. So we had the original Mike Cooper, and we're still got him now.
Has he got any mongrel?
Yeah, he probably has done, he's getting on a little bit now though, but I probably see a little bit of nastiness when the game goes. But Dave Parkinson, myself, did a game against Wakefield Trinity a few years ago, and you may remember it was a Saturday afternoon, and an earlier kickoff, and Warrington won 80-0. And I think it was the last game James Webster had in charge of Wakefield. It was on the same day as the Grand National, which is why the kickoff was earlier. And we tried to get as many as the 40 horse names into the commentary as we could, because it was getting a little bit boring, all the try scoring. So, and I think we got probably about 20, but we didn't pick the winner. So, we'll stick to rugby league. We're no good at horse riding.
And what do you need, Dave? Come on, I mean, this is pretty much all off your own back, isn't it? In terms of that, you know, you're paying for most of it yourself, and you're putting out this wonderful, wonderful service to people in all these hospitals, and trying to sort of brighten their afternoon. What could we do that would just sort of help you to make it a little bit better than it is at the moment?
Yeah, one of the big problems we've got is basically as technology moves on. You know, you have to replace little bits of equipment. And, you know, a lot of people probably aren't aware that Radio General is actually a charity. So although we are based in the hospital, and the hospital are very kind to give us the space and, you know, in the main foyer, and we still have to pay for all your insurances, which is, that's the most expensive thing that you have to pay throughout the year is for insurance. And also for all the phone lines for the rugby as well. And it's what doesn't come cheap. And we've got to try and bring this money in ourselves. So we've got to sort of fundraise as well. We do a lot of things in the community with road shows. You can book them for road shows. We do a lot of things with Walton Gardens, so whenever there's a country fair on and stuff like that. And obviously with this year, we've lost so much in the last couple of months because we haven't been able to go out there and fundraise. So when it comes to buying new rugby equipment, it's not really a top priority. The priority is making sure, of course, the insurances are up to date and, you know, when all the phone lines are paid for so we can continue to go out online. So because the main aim is to help sickness and well-being by sort of entertaining people. So that's the people in the studio. And also we do online now as well. So we're trying to do a lot more about health, obviously mental health, health in the community and things like that. So although the rugby league's been going a long time, it's not priority to get that in. So a few years ago, I think the last year we did the away matches was 2016. When I was lucky enough to do the Challenge Cup final at Wembley and the grand final at Old Trafford as well. And although the results didn't go great, you know, I'll never forget being able to do that and Radio General giving me the opportunity to be able to do that. But our equipment used to use a SIM card, and basically as SIM cards have evolved, they don't fit in that machine anymore and they don't work. So whether we'd have to go down the route of ISDN lines, which is how, you know, your BBC stations, Wire FM, when they were still doing the game, that's how they used to work. But again, the cost of getting an ISDN line into the ground, the actual unit itself, I don't even know how much these things have cost. We're talking thousands of pounds. You know, could do with a lottery winner just to come in and sort of just give us a big bulk.
A big benefactor, like someone. Or
maybe like a rich director possibly who listens to the podcast that might want to stick their hand in the pocket.
Well, you never know. If he does want to listen, you know, we'll be glad if sort of any money that comes into the station. You know, once the lockdown's finished and we're allowed back into the studios, you know, I'm thinking of doing a 24-hour radio show, which basically going to be getting different guests on every hour. So obviously we'll be able to fit you in, Rob, obviously whichever time, although we'd have to go a little bit less on the of course. Can't really say that. Yes. In hospital already.
Oh dear.
Dave, you mentioned about like the mental health side of it, and which is important during the lockdown. Do you think when the season gets up and running, if it does behind closed doors, you'll be allowed in as a journalist, or you know, give some media coverage?
I'm not too sure. The only problem we have with that is although there's myself and usually one other commentator at the ground, you know, at the game, we also need somebody in the studio to push the buttons up, so basically to put us on air. So at the moment we can't go into the studio. Well, not saying we can't, because we haven't been told by the hospital that we're not allowed to, but of course you've got to think of your own safety, you know, and the last place you want to be going if you're healthy is towards a hospital, unless you need to go there. So it's really unfair to say, you know, who's going to go into to do the studio work. So if there's a way around that, then maybe we can commentate on these games, but I think we'll have to be like everybody else and maybe just be doing the Sky TV or whoever ends up broadcasting.
I mean, what basically Dennis was trying to say there, Dave, was do you think he's going to be able to allow back in the in the gantry there and just do the What Would Brian Bevan Say interviews, aren't you, mate? That's what you're after.
Yeah, 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 basically.
Yeah, I think you'll be all right. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you're a big friend of the club now, aren't you? You know what I mean? You've got friends in high places.
You know, when you use the word friend, I'm not sure. Might not.
I must admit, Carl's got slimmer and fitter because he's trying to run away from Dennis. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yes.
I've heard he's going to move his box because his box is just behind us at the press area. So I'm not sure he's going to move across next season.
So last time out, Dennis introduced us all to the Leyline consultancy business, known as Dowsing on Neutral Ground, or the apt acronym of DONG. Let's see what the big cock has in store for us this week, as it's time for Dennis's Tacklebacks.
Tacklebags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
I'd just like to open up, I've been struggling to write tacklebags this week because I've been consulting with the Denmark Football League and as you would have seen probably on the BBC this morning, Denmark have now got a live screen showing all the fans in the crowd there through Zoom. And they've also using augmented reality for the fans as well in the stands under the lockdown conditions. So I've been helping them this week. But, you know, tackle bags, seeing the future, eh? Right. So last week, we presented the competitive advantage of the ley lines that could provide the utilisation of extra energy on the rugby field, where ley lines could be exploited by the running lines and defensive lines of teams to increase the productivity around the ad lines. So we proposed a new initiative in conjunction with Madam Boyd, where, as Rob has already said, dowsing on neutral ground. Dave, you've left. Oh, fucking hell.
Don't worry, Dennis, I'm coming back.
Would you come down to the rugby... Anyway, so we were looking for areas of strong energy that coaches and teams could exploit in the tactics of productivity during the game strategy. I can see you've got Sutty and Sweet there, Dave. Very good. On the back of this, we provide a service for the Warrington Wolves for free to look at the most productive areas. So the response was very good, as you can imagine. Oh, has Rob gone now, has he? Oh, okay. Anyway, we had a big response there. Yes. Only 46%, so not everybody was in agreement.
Not very popular then.
No. I had a letter from Ray Beavertrap. He said, brilliant suggestion. Could you sell the dowsing rugs in the club shop, put little wire pictures on them, and fans could wave them at the match, promoting energy? We'd call this flousing, a combination of flags and dowsing. So that's.
Would you not take someone's eye out with a pointy end?
All right, well, I've put that to the health and safety. No, 52%. We had Phil Dowson. He's a civil engineer. Having worked near the site of the stadium, I can confirm the only running lines in the earth are from gully erosion, carved into the rock from the streams of piss running off the back of where the old ball pub stood. So that's the only lines there. So you've got your big 12-inch chocolate out there, Rob. Very nice. Other 2%, this is from Ty Stripper's Scrotum. Your Leyland's lines run out your arse.
Oh dear.
Not very nice, is it? Right, this week, are you all strapped in? Sutty says yes. Now, who'd like to be a referee?
Listen to that deadly silence. Nothing at all from that, Dennis. None of it. Oh, Sweet does.
Sweet does, says, yeah.
Oh, sweet. So what turns people off about becoming a referee?
All the abuse.
Interesting. Well, we need to, I think, change the profile of the referee. So I've got a new initiative, and it's to revamp the referee's profile and promoting the role and personalities of referees with my new consultancy service called Media Umpiring for Future Sports. Now, I've conducted a survey here. 84% of people believe that referees who engage in social media are better equipped to lead and command a game than those who don't. 82% of people are more likely to trust a referee whose leadership engages with social media. And the FTI research say that successful leaders have comprehensive and tailored social media strategies that underpin their engagement. So it's clear that by improving the referee's social media activity can actually have a direct impact on the referee's performance. So, with my media umpiring for future sports, I've devised a 5-step strategic plan to increase the media profile of our referees in order to command the respect of everyone in our game and improve the overall refereeing. So, do you want to hear the 5-step plan, guys?
Yes, please.
Okay. Now, this is broken down. The first step is to be authentic. Now, I'm going to use a referee here to sort of see how they could use that within the social media circles to reflect this part. So I've picked James Child for this one. Yeah. We're going to put him on TV. Now, we know he lost the plot a bit against Catalan. I'm going to put him on the TV show Under the Hammer or Escape to the Country. And he's going to be the advisor on the house condition because in his previous life, he used to be a chartered surveyor. So it makes sense that, you know, he'll go. It would expose his media profile and make him look more authentic. The second step is disciplined. I've picked Chris Kendall for this one. Now I'm going to put him on Twitter. He loves his dogs. Interesting enough. So I think there's a few dog sites on Twitter that he can offer training and discipline in your animal. And I think that makes sense that they can then portray a disciplined approach, again, exposing a more, giving a more exposure to his profile.
You're right there. He could do a two-hander. He could do a joint presentation with Sweep.
Yeah, well. I don't want to bring any puppets into it. The next one would be creative. Robert Hicks.
He's a puppet.
We know he likes a whistle, but there's a market for a whistling podcast. We don't have any podcasts out there that have whistles. So I thought, well, Robert Hicks could start a whistling podcast. I think that would be quite useful.
What the fuck are you on this week, Dennis?
These are steps to raise the profile of referees and give them more respect in the game. The fourth point is aligned. Now, this is where we need to make sure that, you know, the communications are aligned with the goals of refereeing. And I've looked at Liam Moore, and I'm going to put him on a website. Now, Liam Moore was once an assistant cashier at Yorkshire Bank. Did you know? So
assistant
I would
what?
Like to have him assistant cashier.
That's how they say it down south.
Is it? Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Sam. And so I would put him on the money saving expert website, offering advice on the best deals of finances. And he can maybe put them in the format of refereeing terms, like an offside loan or a last tackle mortgage, etc. And any bad financial deals, he could put in the dusty sin bin. So that he would appear, as I say, on that website. Now, the final one is the emotive one. I'm picking Ben Thaler because I think we've put him as the most popular referee. And the emotive one is really where you sort of, really make a connection between something that you're passionate about. So I would call this on YouTube, Ben Thaler's sock puppet as it happens. Oh. So he would use a sock puppet that would be indifferent from a personality and so on. He would discuss hard topics like iTunes stories with this sock puppet. And then he could actually discuss these really hard hitting topics without actually causing offense because the sock puppet is obviously talking. So that's my Tackle Bags idea of the week to promote referees to get them more respect in the game. So what do you think?
Well, I didn't know you'd gone into public relations, Dennis. So it's clear that that's now your new role, PR for the Super League referees, mates.
Remain indoors. Remain indoors.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Isolation News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plug those dots from those wire clots. The results are in.
It's Pat Moran fishing and the wonder cut away.
Okay, Instagram bought us Toby King in Hyde Park as he peddled up a 60 quid fine, or as Dennis now likes to call him, Tony King. Dennis, forget Hyde Park, as this week there's no hiding for Pat Moran on social media. What have you got for us, or what have you caught for us?
Well, interesting you say caught. There's a few players on Instagram that actually look at like fishing. We've got Charnley and we've got Levette that are constantly posting. But there's also a player that we may have forgotten about. Pat Moran, is he the one that got away? Dave, you know a lot about fishy smells. Do you smell a mistake with Warrington letting him go?
I just think it could be another one again. You know, the coach, you know, as these young players are coming through, you know, they see a lot of them. They go out on loan to other clubs. I know Pat Moran went to Sheffield, didn't he? Did a little bit of Rochdale, I think, as well. And, you know, you've got to be up against the likes of Luke Thompson, Alex Walmsley. We mentioned Liam Watts before. Are these players that good? And I think maybe, you know, Warrington saw that Pat Moran was probably at a level and decided that, you know, maybe Championship was where he was best at, really.
So you think he was floating around?
I think it's the right decision, personally.
He wasn't. You should have hooked him up sooner.
Well, we did a Twitter vote. Did a Twitter vote, and we asked the question: did Wire make a mistake in letting the prop Pat Moran leave the club? It was pretty close, but they were in agreement with Dave. 58% said no, 42% said yes. Didn't really get to see enough of him. What worried me was we had Gareth Walker on the podcast, who really promoted him and thought he was, you know, one for the future. Sam, you saw a little bit of him. What did you make of it?
If Gareth saw him playing at Rochdale and thought he was good at that level, then he's a good Championship player. Whether he was quite good enough to be Super League. Again, in an era of salary caps, you've got to be brutal, haven't you? You've got to cut. Sometimes you'll get it wrong. You've got to cut and wait for the new one to come through. Otherwise, you've got someone you're paying who's taking up a cap space.
Rob, if you were sat on the Sankey Bridges Canal and looked over and saw Pat Moran's rod, would you be sort of rating him based on his equipment?
Yeah. Well, the reason I like Pat Moran is, and this has nothing to do with his play, is that when he's on Instagram, he's a real man. You know, he's not having his hair cut in Wilmslow. He's not preaching in his car about the do's and don'ts of this and that. He's fishing. He's walking his dog. He's with his mum and dad. He's in normal clothes. He's not lubed up with his top off. None of those things. He's just Pat Moran. And that's what I like about him. And I mean, Sam, you're a bit of a fisherman, mate. What was the biggest fish you caught at Tetley Walker Pit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, that's going back some years.
Oh, we're going to go into stats now.
Yeah, it'd be a mirror carp at just over 12 pounds.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Do you know the biggest fish ever caught in British waters? Fresh water. What do you think the biggest fish ever caught?
Nice. Carp. Anyone have
a guess? No, going for a carp, Dennis?
I'm going for a catfish. £80, £90.
I tell you
in
what,
British
you're not...
waters.
Well, it was caught by Matthew Smith in Essex. He was fishing for pike, but he actually caught a catfish. It was £145. It's the British record. Wow. Just to put in that into comparison, the biggest pike ever caught was £45, and Derek Pike, who played for Widnes, was £188 heavier than the heaviest pike ever.
Very tenuous, but I like it.
I had another look in also what's the biggest fish caught just off the beach near me, and the biggest fish caught off the beach near me is a great white, or a white pointer, as the Aussies call them. It was 7 metres long. It was caught 15 years ago. It was 2.5 tonnes.
Do you think that great white could play prop? Could that
be our
fourth prop?
You should say that, because to put it in equivalent, just to work out how heavy that is, that's 19 Adrian Morleys, or nearly 2 Steve Broomheads.
It's time for a new section to the show. Well, I say new. We've just rebadged it. Yes, wait for it. It's coming. Yes, here it is. Lockdown. I said lockdown. Yes, lockdown. lockdown letters, emails, texts, tweets, Twitches, MySpace, Bebo, Friends Reunite, those wankers that write on walls in toilets. You know the ones. Put little dicks on the walls with a sort of hole that turns out to be a glory hole if you stick your cock through it. Not that I'd know that. Anyway, it's time for Lockdown Letters.
Yes, it's time for Lockdown Letters, everyone. Strap in. Now, you didn't give Sam an acronym this week, Dennis, but you'd be pleased to know that we've got a couple of acronyms in the Lockdown Letters this week. The first one I'll start with, actually, we'll probably bring Dave onto this because he's done a bit of commentating and a bit of interviewing. It's coming from Dave Munro. He's got a bit behind on the podcast because he's started a new job. He's just caught up with it all. And the last episode he listened to was the Dave Woods one. He said, that brought back a memory to me about ex-Hull coach Brian Smith once said to me. He said, you guys and Dave mentioned about the ITV Saturday TV games, which Brian used to be the co-commentator on with Clive Tildesley. But on this match, the Wire were playing Hull. I was stood by the tunnel at Wilderspool, where also stood was Brian Smith. He came out to walk onto the pitch with his players. So I asked him, who was taking his place in the commentary box today? His answer was, Mal Meninga, smell my finger, and he walked off. He wants to know what's the most bizarre thing a rugby league player has ever said to any of you guys. So maybe have a think about that, and we'll put that out to the podcasters. Anyone said something a bit odd to you, let us know, and we'll include it in next week's Lockdown Letters. Now, moving on to the letters, we've had a complaint, unfortunately. It's come in from a bloke called Jim Vaseline. I think we've had Jim on the show a few weeks. And it's a complaint towards you, Dennis, unfortunately.
What?
He says, I note Dennis on last week's Tackle Bags very amateurishly touched on the topic of ley lines. So here's my story. While studying in 1986, I once went out with a girl at Coventry Polytechnic who had a tremendously hairy vagina, but was also a dab hand with a wooden ley line. We'd spend many happy Wednesday afternoons skipping lectures to go ley lining with her rod on the grounds of Coventry Cathedral before walking back to my student digs where she'd have a go on my rod before Blockbusters came on. If I close my eyes now, it seems like a distant memory and her beautiful body has metamorphosized into Bob Holness with a pair of hairy bollocks naked. Not only is it a disturbing image, but Bob also is in my mind. He's titillizing his nipples with the tip of his quiz question cards while shouting out to me, bend over, Jim, and take a crack at my gold run. After years of counseling, hypnotherapy, and hydrotherapy, I've managed to flush this from my memory until Dennis mentioned ley lines, and the nightmare of Bob came flooding back. Until Dennis Tackle Bags comes with a medical health warning, I'm boycotting the podcast.
It doesn't need a... No, I'm sorry, but he's out of order, clearly. He doesn't need a health warning, does it?
Does anyone enjoy Blockbusters? I used to like Blockbusters. I always felt sorry for the one that was the one and not the two.
Yeah, although they only had to get one less question right, didn't they, to go that way?
Well, the math's not right then, is it? Surely, you know, two minds are better than one and it's just not quite right.
Two minds can confuse issues, though, can't they? And you can second guess each other.
I guess so. Fan of Blockbusters, Dave? Remember Blockbusters for your time?
Yeah. I was a little youngster when it was out, but, you know, the amount of times you used to giggle every time they asked for a pig.
Yeah. But we know what mascots David have now, don't we, if he was going on Blockbusters?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I shared a birthday with him.
Who, Bob Holness? He's dead. He's dead, isn't he?
I know, but he was born on the same day as me.
Right. Les Goebbels has written in from Latchford.
Oh, God. Be careful.
Can I just
disassociate myself with the next minute? Whatever it's going to be, I'm going to disassociate myself with the next
Faulty
minute.
Faulty Towers was taken off air this week for the German...
it's funny you should say that. I've got a letter about that in a minute. Les Goebbels has come on. He's from Latchford. He's 54 and he's a keen Wire fan. He said, with rugby league setting a date in August to carry on playing behind closed doors, I'm at a loss of how I'll be able to attend. However, can the podcast get in touch with Carl to see whether I could become a ball boy? Ageism in the workplace can no longer be discriminated at and means I can surely apply for the role. I stay active by taking my dog named Rolf Harris out behind the bins at Lidl for a shit every night before I go to bed. And even though I'm 9 stone heavier than when I left school, at a stretch, I could probably still fit into my 1980s Kappa tracksuit. Loving the podcast, and look out for me in August on the telly, working the touchline. Cheers, Les Goebbels. So let's have a see how that one goes. It sounds pretty good to me. Still got your tracksuit from the 1980s, Dave?
It was an Alessi tracksuit in the time. You know, A Ravers one, you know what I mean, with a big E on the front.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right, this one's coming from Raquel Walsh. She says, due to the modern day political... Have you got your pencil ready, Sam? I think there's a few acronyms in this one. Get ready for this.
Yeah.
She says, due to the modern day political correctness and the BBC's decision to take down an episode of Fawlty Towers from UK TV entitled Don't Mention the War, in an exercise the BBC calls Content Unidentified Network Transmissions. Got that one, Sam? Anything for us?
I got BBC.
Has the podcast
big black cock?
Has the podcast considered running a review of their PC broadcasting? Well, Raquel, you'd be pleased to know, due to your email, we've bent over backwards and performed a vigorously deep and extensive internal investigation of our back catalogue. And what would Brian Bevan say exercise called? Gratuitously implied moralistic podcasting, or our acronym GIMP. We'd like to read the following statement, if that's okay. There are an enormous and cavernous difference between choosing a stop celebrating values of society no longer holds and the censoring and fact that those values ever existed. So I think I've put that one to bed, haven't I, lads? That's pretty good. Hope that clears everything up. As a token towards bringing that to our attention there, Raquel, we'll be sending you our new recently launched 2020, what would Brian Bevan say, lingerie range, a primrose and blue negligee. Okay, that's it for another week. Keep your lockdown letters coming in for Sam so he can prehistorically print them off to whatbevan@gmail.com. Tweet to whatbevan, or if you want to put your Christmas lights up in November, there's always Facebook. So on this day, 800 years ago, modern democracy was born with the signing of the Magna Carta. It's a signing off from the brilliant Dave Birch.
At Bam Power.
On this date in 1940, the French surrendered to Nazi Germany, which is possibly the first indication, perhaps, of the Catalans' leaked events. It's a coming out with your hands above your head from Sam.
All the best.
And forget democracy, because on this date in 1931, Poland and the USSR signed a friendship treaty that didn't end too well. But then I guess not all signings do. So until he rolls out the burrell again, it's a goodbye comrade from Dennis.
Vividya dietaba.
I'm Rob London. I'm off to dig up a few historical facts. I know I'm not after Baldrick's job off time team, but I guess I do have a slight crush on that BBC historian Kate Williams, although she wouldn't be interested in my old fossil. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
You're not going to replace me with Dave, are you?
Pretty good, isn't it?
I can't make up that shit for tackle bags, honestly. I don't know where it comes from.
You know you only used to